Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Well, it looks like in Minnesota, spring is short-lived. We're back in winter. The same in Colorado. It takes a while for the seasons to change.
Hi everyone, my name is Becca and I'm the program host for today, so if there's anything that you need throughout the day, feel free to come in and talk to me. I have just a few announcements before we get started. So I just want to let everyone know that there are restrooms up here outside of the store, also downstairs. There's space for jackets and shoes downstairs as well. No food or beverages in the Dhamma Hall other than water. There's tea available in the community room. If you would like, there's a roll of tape and a marker. You can put your name on it and use a cup for the day. For lunch today, it will be at 12:15. And what we'll do is we will prepare, if whoever has brought food for Amma, we can put it out on the table in the community room, and we'll serve her first, and then we can all then get our own meals. There's a kitchenette and refrigerator downstairs as well, if you would like to store and prepare your food there. I believe lunch will be Noble Silence, so just keep that in mind. Any other things that you can think of?
I don't think so.
So then I just want to introduce Amma Tanasanti. It's very much an honor to have you here with us today.
Thank you.
Just to give you all some information about her. She was born in California and found the Dhamma in 1979. She went to Asia and met Deepa Ma and Ajahn Chah, which is an amazing honor. In 1989, she went to England and joined the community of nuns there, and she lived there for 20 years. In 2009, she decided to come back to the States because she wished that she could bring the Bhikkhuni tradition back to the West, and she founded the organization Awakening Truth to help with that vision. And in 2010, she ordained as a Bhikkhuni in the first Theravada Bhikkhuni ceremony in the U.S., is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And was that in California, in Aranyabodhi? And I had the honor of visiting there once, so that's exciting. And today she's in Colorado in her Shakti Vihara hermitage. So, welcome. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Becca. Thank you very much. So, I appreciate that it takes quite an effort to clear a day for a meditation practice. And so to make optimum use of our time together, I thought that it would be helpful to establish a container that we can all relax into. So one of the things that's useful as a container is to establish the refuges and the precepts. Because when we connect with refuges and precepts, immediately we connect ourselves with something that's a hugely bigger than the immediacy of our own circle of thoughts and feelings and perceptions, our own story. And so when we look at refuge, you know, taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, you know, taking refuge in the Buddha is taking refuge in the awakened mind. This is huge, it's vast, it's timeless, it's been going on for a very long time and will continue for a very long time. And in fact, Buddhists don't have a monopoly on the awakened mind. When we take refuge in the Dhamma, certainly we can take refuge in the legacy of the Buddha's teachings, which are vast. But But in taking refuge in the Dhamma, we're also taking refuge in the truth of the way things are. You know, the waking up to what's actually happening in the present moment. And again, Buddhists don't have a monopoly on the truth of the way things are. You know? And then in taking refuge with the Sangha, you know, we're taking refuge on one hand, the Arya Sangha, the awakened Sangha, the noble ones who have clear insight. Classically, it's looking to the monastic Sangha in our relationship with them, because traditionally they have been the torchbearers of the Dhamma. But in a contemporary North America, having
you turn your microphone up.
I think we need to. Can we move it any closer?
We can try.
Oh, that's yeah.
Much better.
How's that? Is that better? Yeah. Okay. No. Yes. No. Yes. Okay. So when we take refuge in the Sangha and we're taking refuge in the awakened ones, traditionally this has been, the torchbearers have been the monastic Sangha. And what's fascinating about the way things are evolving in North America is the Sangha have a very different position. Most of the communities are run by lay teachers, and most of the communities are focused around the lay community. And often you have lots of lay communities and there isn't so much association with the monastic community. So maybe during my time here, I can share my vision about what I think would be a lovely way that we might move forward from where we're at now. But that's a whole other story. So when we took at the aspiration to awaken, which is what this Sangha is embodying, again, the Buddhists don't have a monopoly on that. So one of the things that I love is that to take refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, which is to make ourselves blue chip card carrying Buddhists, actually the Buddhists don't have a monopoly on. Okay? So the one thing that really defines us as being Buddhists is actually not limited to Buddhists. So we take refuge and then we establish precepts, and the precepts create a holding, a container, a clarity that we're on the same page, that we can relax and trust ourselves and trust each other. You know, so the first precept, to refrain from killing, is also on a subtler level, is to refrain from doing any harm. Okay? So I don't expect that anybody here is actually going to really seriously be tempted to murder somebody. Okay? We might think it, you know, but I don't think it's actually going to be something that we're going to struggle with as an activity for the day. I might be wrong. But what happens for most of us is that we have all kinds of incredibly deeply embedded patterns of slandering and shaming and self-criticism and ways in which we hurt and harm ourselves. And this is so endemic and so much wallpaper, we don't even notice it. Okay? So when we take the precept to refrain from doing harm to heart, then we have got to find ground where we stop indulging in these thoughts and believing them as ultimate truth, that this is actually stuff that's right and true and worthy to follow. We have to have time out on these thoughts where we're berating ourselves, we're shaming ourselves, we're cutting ourselves down, we're ripping ourselves to pieces. You know, it has got to stop. And so if the only thing that happens on this day-long retreat is there becomes a commitment to act vigilantly against this stuff that loops constantly, where we are not believing and enacting it, then this would be a magnificently successful retreat. Just that. Because if we don't have that, we have no basis. And that means that we have no basis for ourselves, we have no basis of generating kindness and harmlessness to others, because what we do to ourselves leaks out to the world around us. We have got to start here. It has got to be a priority. We stop that, which means that we have to wake up to the fact that it happens. Okay? This is no joke. For most of us, this has been going on from the time we've been knee-high to a grasshopper. And it is embedded. It's like wallpaper. We don't even see that it's happening. We have to wake up to this, recognize it, and stop following these thoughts. Okay? The second precept is to refrain from taking what's not given. Now, okay, so there's food in the hall. We're not supposed to eat it until lunchtime. People have got purses. I've got my bag. It's like not for somebody to pilfer somebody else's stuff. I don't think that's going to be a problem here, all right? But what happens for many of us is that we sit with this kind of idea, if only. If only I can be feeling something different. If only I can be feeling energy when I'm not feeling energy. If only I can have bright, nice mind states when I'm feeling dark and contracted. If only I can have all the things that I'm not having. So it's not that we're actually stealing somebody else's possessions. We're hankering after what isn't present with this idea that if we wish for it hard enough, somehow it's going to come. Okay? So the interior reflection on refraining from taking what is not given is to be present with what is in our minds, in our bodies, in our hearts, in our mind states. The third precept around sexuality is a whole huge conversation by itself and a really important one that we get a handle on. Because one of the things that can happen in Dhamma centers is there's this implicit assumption that everybody's sexuality is left outside the door when you take off your shoes, and that this is something that we don't have to deal with. Well, guess what? It doesn't work like that. And so rather than the precept of abstinence with sexuality being a cutting off of sexuality, it's a permission to totally embody it. To totally relax into knowing what it is to be a human being with a body that has sexuality. And that's true, independent of your precepts, independent of your partnership, independent of your celibacy, independent of your sexual orientation. With human bodies, we have sexuality. So the precept to not engage in sexual activity is permission to feel, not permission to disconnect. It doesn't mean we act on it, but it doesn't mean we disassociate from this is going on in our bodies. The fourth precept, the precept to refrain from incorrect speech, has to do with talking in a way which is untruthful, speaking in a way which is divisive or slanderous, and speaking in a way which is harsh. Now, when I hang out with my punks, I swear, because that's the language that they speak. So harsh doesn't mean not swearing when you're talking to punks. It also means talking about what's useful and what's relevant, you know. And a lot of the times, the kind of stuff that comes out is just useless prattle, because there's social norms about what's acceptable to say, and a lot of it is very, very superficial, right? So we can use this as a kind of reflection of, well, can I take it a notch deeper? Can I actually crank up the interest to be genuine and authentic? Can I use this as a way of really dialing in to my curiosity about what's going on with this other person? Or do I let the social norms ride over my heartfelt longing to be genuine and authentic and real? And just say something that's completely unnecessary or trivial. And we have these choices every time we open our mouth, no matter what social situation we're in. So in a context like this, you know, the request is noble silence, and not because silence creates some kind of a mystical container that, you know, makes a magic where all of a sudden we have direct insight, but because our habits around speech are so highly conditioned that if we don't have container around that and support with that, oftentimes what's happening is it's generating these cultural patterns rather than uses as an access for genuine inquiry. So the later part of this afternoon, we're going to do insight dialogue, which is more structured support inquiry around particular themes, to use the structure to go deep into what it is that we're talking about to support connection, to support inquiry, to support using language in a way that allows our hearts to connect with each other and our interests to support our inquiry into what's actually going on in the Dhamma. Okay? And I'll talk more about that later. And then the fifth precept. Well, the fourth precept, you know, the subtle interpretation of that is watching what happens with our thoughts. So thinking is pre-verbal speech. It's what we have before we actually say something. So in the same way that it's useful not to believe stuff that is harmful and harsh towards ourselves, we can look and see, you know, how much of it is true, how much of it is useful, how much of it is harsh, how much of it is slanderous, how much of it is divisive. Now, this is our thinking. And how we relate to our thoughts has a huge impact on how we feel and how we experience the world and the kind of sense of, you know, our relationship with many things. It's very important. Are there any questions about refuges and precepts? It's okay? Yeah. So what I'd like to do is just to suggest that we just affirm them now. So what I would like to suggest is that you repeat after me. I'll say Namo Tassa three times and then you repeat that after. Okay, are you familiar with that chanting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the refuges and then the precepts, and I'll do them in English. Are you familiar with the Pali chanting with the precepts?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, ace, group. Okay, so we'll do the Pali and English with the precepts. All right. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. 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 So now when we do the refuges, don't just recite the words as kind of empty. Really touch into what these mean for you, taking refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Duttiyaṃ pi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Duttiyaṃ pi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Duttiyaṃ pi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyaṃ pi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyaṃ pi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyaṃ pi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. And now the precepts. Really see if in taking and affirming these precepts we can bring forward wholehearted commitment to refrain from these behaviors. Panatipata veramani sikabadam samadhiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from destroying any living creature. Repeat after me.
I undertake the precept to refrain from destroying any living creature.
Adina dana veramani sikabadang samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given.
Kame sumichachara veramani sikavadam samadhyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct.
I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct.
Musavada veramani sikavadam samadhyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from incorrect speech.
I undertake the precept to refrain from incorrect speech.
Sura merayam ajapamadatana veramani sikabadam samadhiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from intoxicating drinks and drugs which lead to carelessness.
I undertake
the precept to refrain
from intoxicating drinks and drugs, which lead to carelessness.
Lovely. So let's start again with standing. I find standing really very important practice. Zavitans, because you have more contact with the floor, a little bit more balance. So what if I'm asking is for your feet to your toes to spread out, and for your balance to find a midpoint between front and back and between side to side. So just begin to rock front and back till you find a place that feels really balanced. And rock side to side until you can really feel that your weight is evenly distributed between both feet. And loosen your ankles and unlock your knees. And your sitting bones want to tuck under. So if we had a nice big bushy tail like a coyote, we would tuck that between our legs, and that would put the sitting bones in the right place, which then allows the sacrum to be in the right relationship with the spine, and then the spine can elongate. And the neck can elongate. And as the spine and neck elongate, then the shoulders can slip back, like we're letting them rest in our back hip pockets. And our arms can just rest at our side, our fingers gently curled at our thighs. And if at any point during the standing you feel like you need to sit down, please trust yourself. So we're not on a road march to nirvana. So what I'd like you to do is connect with the soles of your feet. Really put all of your attention in the soles of your feet, and in the ball of your foot is a point, an acupuncture point. Allow or imagine that point to open up, and imagine you've got tree roots growing from the bottom of your feet through the floorboards, through the foundations of this building, into the earth beneath us. Now, for some people, tree roots work well. For other people, steel girders work well. For other people, they can imagine being in a waterfall and the waterfall going into the center of the earth. So for different people, there's a different sense of what helps them feel connected and grounded to the earth. But what's important is that we take a few minutes and ground. Now, grounding was not something that was described in the Pali Canon. There are no instructions on grounding. And I have found it so incredibly supportive, because when I am grounded, it's a lot easier for attention to settle in the body, which the Buddha did encourage. So this is a skillful means to support the Buddha's teachings, learning how to ground. So dropping those energetic anchors miles into the earth, not a few inches or a few feet or a few hundred feet, but letting those roots go miles into the earth. And notice, as you do that, what starts to happen to your body. So don't superimpose what's supposed to happen, being open and receptive to what is happening. So when we have an energetic connection with the earth, we can release tension into the earth. So the flurry of the morning and getting here and bracing against the chilly wind after a warm day yesterday. Setting aside the duties, the details of all the things that need to happen. And just letting the muscles relax. Now, one way to support relaxation, in addition to what we did yesterday, which is to deliberately go through and invite relaxation, is to invite heaviness. So just imagine that there is a wave moving from your feet all the way up through your body. And as this wave moves, your body becomes like a lead, heavy, pulling into the earth. Your feet become like lead. And lead is very still. It doesn't flex, it doesn't flow, it doesn't have pulsings in it. And your ankles and your calves become like lead. And your knees become like lead. And your thighs become like lead, the inner thigh and the outer thigh. And the hip joints and the hip sockets become like lead. So everything becomes incredibly heavy. And the whole pelvic floor becomes like lead. And the lower part of our torso becomes like lead with the organs, the digestive organs, the excretory organs, the stomach, the back, the lower part of the torso is becoming like lead, heavy, quiet, still. And the middle part of the torso with the stomach and the spleen, the liver, and the back. The diaphragm, the kidneys. And then the upper part of the torso, the heart and the lungs, shoulders, the shoulder blades. Let it become incredibly heavy. And let your fingers become heavy. They feel like they're just pulling, huge weights are just pulling into the earth, and your hands become heavy. And your wrists and your forearms become heavy. Your elbows. The upper arm becomes heavy, and the shoulder blades and shoulders again become heavy. Just letting them become so heavy. Now allowing the heaviness to move up the neck, the throat, and the back of the head, to the jaw. And to the lips and to the tongue, and the base of the tongue and the roof of the mouth and the whole cheekbones, nose, eyes. Just allow the eyes to become like lead balls in the socket. And the muscles behind the eyes to become heavy. And the brow of the forehead and the back of the head, the whole scalp. And the top of the head. So the whole body just feels so heavy and so still and so quiet, like lead. Pulling into the earth like lead. You know, if somebody tried to lift you, they couldn't lift you because you just weigh a ton. Now these energetic anchors go two ways. And so we can release our tension into the earth and we can bring the vitality of the earth through these roots into our feet. So the vitality of all these trees that are budding and the tulips that are flowering, spring is just around the corner. You know, the fertility of the earth, the fecundity of the earth, the sweetness of the lakes and the wide open skies, and the deer, the coyotes that are in the hills. All of this has a life force, a vitality to it. So allowing that vitality to come through these energetic roots deep into the earth, into our feet, and awaken. And just feel the explosion of what happens when the leaden feet start to awaken. With breath, with awareness, with life force. Ankles, awaken. Shins and calves, awaken. Knees, awaken. The inner thigh, the outer thigh, awakens. The hip sockets, the pelvic floor, it awakens, invigorates, comes alive with breath, with awareness, with life force. The whole lower part of the torso, front and back, and all the organs awaken, become energized, invigorated, alive. The middle part of the torso awakens. The diaphragm, xiphoid process, the lower ribs, the upper part of the torso, the heart, the lungs, the shoulder blades awakens. Fingers come alive, hands come alive, wrists come alive, the lower part of the arm, breath, awareness, and life force awaken. The upper part of the arm, the neck awakens. The mouth, the jaw, the face awakens. eyes are suffused with life force, with breath, with awareness. The scalp breathes and awakens. The whole body, from the soles of the feet all the way up to the top of the head, awakens with life force, with breath and awareness. Awareness that doesn't judge, awareness that allows, awareness that meets and welcomes what is. Now, with the same degree of care and attention and interest, changing posture to come into sitting, being curious what it feels like to move from standing to sitting. How much of the shift in posture can you be present for? So as we're settling into sitting posture, just noticing the different space, the different sensations, the different feeling of stability, the different place of pressure. And one of the things that's incredibly helpful is to take a little bit of time and to see that our sitting posture is balanced, aligned, and relaxed. So when we're sitting, ideally, there's 3 points of contact to create a very stable base: our seat and our knees, if we're sitting on the cushions on the floor, or our seat and our feet if we're sitting on the edge of a chair. And so if your knees are up, sometimes what's helpful is to have more height underneath your seat, and so you might need to get another cushion or to roll your cushion or to sit with your legs straddling your cushion. Or to take part of the zabutan and fold it over and have that add height to the cushion underneath you. And then our sacrum is in the opposite relationship sitting as it is standing. So if in standing we tuck our nice big bushy tail between our legs, when we're sitting we take our bushy tail and put it up. And so what that does is it puts the top of the pelvis slightly forward of the sitting bones. And when we're sitting in chairs, really the best way to support that is to sit on the edge of the chair. Because when you're leaning back into the backrest, oftentimes the hips are curled in the wrong way. So if you need to get up and get another cushion or fiddle or whatever, please feel welcome to do that. It's really helpful that the posture is relaxed and comfortable and balanced, because we're going to be sitting quite a bit today. And so when we're sitting, sometimes again it's helpful just to rock on the sacrum and to get a sense of what balanced feels like. So if you rock forward and rock back, just slightly, you can get a sense of when is it that the rocking forward starts to pull you forward and you need to resist it. And when does the rocking back pull you back and you need to resist that? So what we want is a place where we're not being pulled forward or back. And again, when we find that place of balance, when the sacrum is tilted slightly forward so that the top of the hips are just slightly in front of the sitting bones, the spine can elongate. The neck can elongate. The shoulders can slip back and down. So balance supports alignment in gravity. Now, when we breathe, notice that there's a movement and if we sit intending that there is no movement, try and sit absolutely still where there's no movement. Feels a little bit like trying to breathe in a concrete bunker. Now, relax, and with each breath, feel the movement. With the in-breath, feel how your sacrum rocks a slight bit so that your torso is leaning a fraction more forward. How with the out-breath, your sacrum rocks backwards and your torso is leaning a little bit backwards. So with each in-breath and out-breath is a normal rocking motion of the sacrum and the torso. And this is right. This is natural. This is in accordance with nature. When our bodies are imbalanced, when we are aligned, that supports relaxation. So there are ways where tension is not a personal problem, but a result of causes and conditions. And when we understand what supports relaxation, relaxation happens without having to will it, to make it, to do it. It's the result of alignment and balance. Relaxation happens.